My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me. So, like the other chap, I have a wife who speaks fluent Spanish and also shouts at me in Spanish. It seems like Spanish is the language of choice for having arguments. So, my Spanish, I'm afraid, is limited to ordering a beer and lots of swear words that I don't really understand. So apologies for doing my presentation in English. So what am I going to talk to you guys about? So first of all, we'll give you a quick introduction to the United Nations Global Geographic Information Management Group. Then I'll talk you through a few case studies of the sorts of things they talk about at UNGGIM. And then I'll take you on a quick tour through a document that was produced that talks about future trends in geographic information. I guess the significance of this presentation is that that the UN are discussing geographic information, crowdsourcing, open source software at a global level with all sorts of senior government mapping administrators from across the globe. I don't think you'll find anything in the presentation that surprises you. When we talk about trends, there'll be trends that you're fully aware of. So, that, like I say, the significance is that that our industry, the work that we do, is being discussed across the globe with the UN. Okay, so first of all, just a quick introduction. So, like hopefully was explained in the introduction, I work for Ordnance Survey. I don't work for the UN. Ordnance Survey sit on UNGGIM, as do lots of other national mapping agencies from across the globe. The reason that UNGGIM exists is thanks to Paul Cheng, who is a statistician working for the UN, and realized that through the work that he and his teams were doing on statistics, there was no really good concrete framework for statistics or geographical information linked to statistics happening at the UN, and he saw that as a gap. The need to coordinate and collaborate across the globe to ensure that geographic information is made available to all, that standards are adhered to, that best practice is shared, and so on. So he came up with the idea of forming something called UNGGIM. So like I say, the United Nations Global Geographic Information Management Group, who get together, it's kind of like FOS4G, although everybody wears suits, gets together to talk about mapping, talk about policy, talk about standards, talk about how we should share best practice across the globe. And it's made up of a group of senior folks from each country. So those tend to be the people that work in the national mapping agencies or cartographic agencies. So in the UK, that's my boss and my boss's boss. They're the folks that turn up to sort of represent the UK. The idea is not to dictate policy. It's more to there's no sort of formal power that comes with the UNGGIM. It's more that best practice is shared so that member states can start to implement their own policies. So I guess again kind of similar to sort of open source software, where you don't dictate anybody does anything, but you discuss and agree a direction that you might want to collectively go in. So why might that need to happen at a global level? Really because government feels that it has a role to play in coordinating geographic information across the globe. That role currently is being filled in by the private sector, and it's something that the public sector wanted to get a handle on and start to work on together. So as you see, setting standards around policy and data sharing and so on and so forth. The UNGGIM got together and agreed that they would focus on these strategic principles. So these are the things they're trying to get a handle on, share with one another, and develop policy on. So a couple of examples, like I say, best practices, and we'll show you some examples of the sorts of best practice that's discussed at UNGGIM in just a second. Importantly, particularly in developing countries, really building a capability to map, so those developed countries sharing their expertise on how they go about mapping their parts of the world and trying to build up capability in less well-developed parts of the globe. Ensuring that mapping data that's captured across the globe is done so to a required level of quality, and that it's that, that quality is understood, and that data sets can be shared with one another easily. Making sure that, that mapping agencies across the globe are aware of, up to date with, and exploit trends in technology, and we'll talk about a few of those in just a moment. Making sure that people within government in particular, that's education, that universities and so on, are all understand the power of geography, train people to exploit geography and use geography to make more informed decisions about how they might manage their country. Working with the private sector, so the private sector would include, in UN speak at least, would include free and open source software and crowdsourced data. And given the founding of UNGGIM, making sure that geography is the framework upon which statistics can be linked. So some quick examples of the sorts of things that are discussed at UNGGIM. So in this example, Brazil at a recent conference came along and shared their experience of building a mapping solution that they've used to reduce crime in Brazil. So you can see they spent a reasonable amount of money mapping their entire cities in 27 states, and as a result of doing that, reduced their crime rates fairly significantly. Likewise, in Singapore, they've created a full 3D model of Singapore that they use to help manage their land, manage their country, and make more effective decisions about how they spend their money and how they develop land and so on. So, again, just a couple of examples of the sorts of things that people talk about. So it's not just developed countries, it's developing and underdeveloped countries that come and share their expertise with one another so that people can pick up pointers and start to change policies and so on. So that's hopefully a quick introduction to what UNGGIM does. So UN body filled with people across the globe who are responsible, government people who are responsible for mapping. They meet once a year. There are regional chapters that meet maybe every quarter. Those are still being formed. There's one for the EU, one for APAC, one for Africa, and one for the US, North and South, I think. They don't set policy so much as advise on best practice so that member states can implement their own policies. And the idea is that by having this global joined-up view, we'll be better able to manage the globe and we'll be able to better exploit geography across the globe. So that's an intro to UNGGIM. But the bit that I wanted to talk to you about was future trends in GI. So one of the first things that has come out of UNGGIM is this report that looks at the next 5 to 10 years and looks at the sorts of trends we're seeing in technology, the sorts of trends we might be seeing in legal and policy frameworks, the state of the industry, if you like, what the UN thinks is going to happen over the next 5 to 10 years. The report was created with input from people from across the globe, so from all of the national mapping agencies involved in UNGGIM and all of the folks in country that work with those national mapping agencies, and they identified 5 different themes. So trends in technology, which we'll talk about, legal and policy developments, skills and training requirements, the role of private and non-governmental sectors, so private and non-governmental would be NGOs, obviously, but also open source software, open source data, and thinking around the future role of government in providing data. So the reports, I've got all the links to reports, but it's all available in just about every language known to man, so you guys can download it. I'm not sure it's in Catalan, but you can certainly download it in Spanish. Okay, so giving you a very quick whistle-stop tour. So first one around trends in technology. Like I say, there's nothing in here that you guys will be surprised at. The importance is that it's being discussed at UN level. So firstly, everything we do is kind of tracked. Everything we touch is a sensor. So our mobile phone, cars, sat navs, car keys are all geospatial sensors collecting information about us and about what we do. That trend will continue as cost is driven out of the sorts of eye beacons and cheap geospatial sensors, that proliferation of data will continue over the next 5 to 10 years. They'll enable a whole bunch of new interesting applications, like being able to find your car keys or being able to find your space in the car park, but most importantly, generate significant volumes of data relatively rapidly and relatively easily. In our company, we just ordered some of the eye beacons from Kickstarter, and they're less than 100 euros for sure, and enable you to start to track how people are moving around our building. So that kind of low-cost geospatial sensor exists today and will proliferate over the next 5 to 10 years. Like I say, again, something that you'll read about all over the place, but important that the UN are thinking about these sorts of things. With that proliferation of data, the challenge we face is not sort of collecting it, it's analysing it and understanding it. So the volume of data that's created far exceeds our ability to process and understand that data. So there's a challenge that we need collectively to think around is how can we make best use of all this data that's captured through all these sensors, through social media, through mobile phones, etc. We're not wanting for data, we're wanting for kind of maths brains, I guess, to understand it. We think it's increasingly, or the UN think it's increasingly important to be able to tie data sets together. Their kind of mechanism of choice, if you like, for tying data sets together or linking them together would be to use linked data, to use URIs to join data sets together. They think that's increasingly important or will be important in things like land management, disaster recovery for emergency services, those sorts of things. So as this data is collected, it's important to ensure that it can be tied back together. So cloud computing has disrupted our industry over about the last 5 years. That trend will continue, and the point here is encouraging mapping agencies, mapping companies, open source mapping communities to seek to exploit cloud computing and the benefits in benefits it gives you in terms of scalability and pricing model to bring geospatial products and data sets to market more rapidly than you might otherwise be able to. Important one for you guys. The UN believes that open source GI software is an extremely important technology trend that we'll see increasing over the next few years. They talk about when resources are scarce, so using open source software in the developing parts of the world. But also, increasingly, you'll notice it doesn't just say we use open source. We expect people to use open source software because it's free. It says because it's the best solution as well. So it's chosen on merit, just not necessarily just on price. It's chosen because you're able to modify, tweak, and change the source code to your liking. And it's important because a whole bunch of kids going through university are exposed to QGIS and GeoServer and MapServer and so on. So it becomes the most familiar mapping technology that people grow up with and therefore will take into their professional lives. Again, unsurprisingly, the expectation is that over the next 10 years, five to 10 years, we'll see an increasing prevalence of 3D data, increasing prevalence of sort of super duper 3D data. So the example down the bottom is one from our company where we use LiDAR, sort of photorealistic LiDAR in some way that I don't fully understand, to create a 360-degree high-resolution 3D model of the south coast of England. That kind of thing will start to become part of the norm. People will expect photorealistic 3D worlds to go and walk around in, maybe with their Oculus Rift glasses on. So that data, that trend towards 3D data will only accelerate and continue over the next few years. At the same time, we'll start to see an increasing use of mapping combined with time. So being able to go back and see what an area might have looked like before development or before a disaster. You see odds and sods where people mix mapping data or spatial data and temporal data together at the moment, but you don't. But I think the increasing expectation is we'll see more and more of that. We'll all have a UAV and be able to fly it around our back gardens, collecting all sorts of information. So UAVs are clearly here to stay. Whatever your views on them, they provide a extremely cheap and economical way of capturing geographic information, in particular in areas where you can't go out with a GPS unit safely or sensibly. They will also expect them to be sort of, it's not just aerial imagery those things will capture, you can stick other sensors on those UAVs and capture all sorts of additional data sets, so infrared and things like that, for example. So the UN expects UAVs to proliferate around the world, and are expecting national mapping agencies and the GI industry as a whole to seek to exploit UAVs to create more richer and more improved data sets. But it's not going to all be UAVs. We expect. Clearly, there's going to be an expectation. There will continue to be a reliance on remote sense data. That stuff is going to get more accurate. Unsurprisingly, it's going to. But so that level of accuracy will just be kind of be just kind of par for the course. You'll expect there'll be no differentiation based on accuracy. Differentiation in remote sensed data will be around timeliness. So being able to get your images quickly rather than the resolution of images are how remote sensing will differentiate, or different remote sensing providers will differentiate themselves from one another. Also expect there to be an increasing ease in which you can identify features and data sets from remote sense imagery. So using things like machine vision or computer vision and machine learning to automatically recognize features from imagery will become sort of not a state of the art, it'll become more de rigueur than state of the art. So something that we look at internally is how we can just run algorithms over our aerial imagery, so flown from a plane. And it's entirely possible to start to capture things like the outlines of building polygons using machines rather than tracing over them. So something interesting if you're an OpenStreetMap contributor, thinking around how you might capture information from imagery without having lots of people tracing over that imagery is definitely something that folks will be working on the next few years. I love that presentation, by the way, about that's just so cool, building a Galileo sensor with a bit of TV and an aerial. I mean, how cool is that? GNSS will enable us to get faster and more accurate GPS fixes. It's important. One of the roles of the UNGGIM is, or one of the projects they're working on, is a global geodetic reference architecture. So trying to ensure that there's a standard way of correcting GPS signals across the globe, trying to ensure and encourage, particularly in developing nations, differential GPS infrastructures to be set up to enable folks to capture data really quite accurately on the ground, helps with things like land registration, for example. So there's a working party who are hoping to pass a UN resolution that will enable people that are responsible for geodetics in countries across the world to help lobby their governments to get the funding to put infrastructure in place to enable them to correct their GPSs in countries. Okay, so that's whistle stop through technology. Legal and policy. So the majority of countries across the world today use public money or taxpayer money to capture geographic information. There's clearly an increasing pressure from everybody, frankly, to make that geographic information available free at the point of use. So in the UK, about 60% of the data that we produce in Ordnance Survey is available to people to come and download and do whatever they like with. That presents some challenges for national mapping agencies in terms of how they're funded. So if they're not selling data, they need to think about to make the case for continued government funding to enable them to make data available. If they don't do that, that data will quickly become out of date, incomplete, and so on. So at the same time, they need to work with the private sector and open source communities to drive down their costs, improve efficiencies, and start to collect data from the crowd, as well as by paying kind of surveyors to walk around with GPS devices, or in our case, by paying people to fly planes around. So really, as we're trying to make more and more data available to people for free, we need to ensure that we maintain the funding that enables us to collect that data, but also we seek out opportunities to work with other parts of the industry to capture that data more effectively and cheaply. Other policy things, so at the moment, national mapping agencies aren't really, they don't tend to be sued when bad things happen because of inaccuracies in maps. In our case, there are lots of press stories about people navigating using their TomTom and getting stuck in a river and all sorts of things like that. But in our case, that we use disclaimers to protect ourselves against litigation. So if you drive your car into a river because we've made a mistake with our maps, it's kind of hard luck, unfortunately. However, we don't think that kind of defence will hold water. So there are three kind of options available to mapping agencies. You can either accept the risk, so you produce this data, you put a disclaimer on it, but you fully expect somebody to drive their car into a river and sue you for a new car. Two, you can, because you're part of a mapping agency and part of government could make some decisions to limit that liability. So if you drive your car into a river, sorry, we're not going to buy you a new car. You maybe want to watch where you're going. Or three, you can start to increase the price of data, either even if that data is made available for free, increase the price by taking out some kind of insurance and offering it with a warranty. So it's an interesting kind of challenge that geospatial organizations are expecting to face over the next 5 years. How do they protect themselves against the risk of being sued for inaccuracies in the data, whilst at the same time not spending large amounts of money on insurance policies to cover them in case they are sued? At the same time, all of these legal and policy frameworks, it's important that they work across the globe. So, for example, privacy is one that a lot of folks are talking about at the moment following the NSA stuff. We need to ensure that privacy policy that we implement in the UK or the EU that protects us as citizens from people doing interesting things with perhaps track logs from our mobile devices, that similar, we're afforded the same sorts of protections when we move across the globe. So it's important at the UN level to work together on these sorts of frameworks so that as citizens we understand and it can be assured of how our data is protected as we move around the world. Okay, so we've done technology, done legal and policy, skills and training. So, like we talked about at the beginning, there's lots of sensors, masses and masses of data being collected. The real challenge for our industry is not so much in creating maps, but really processing that data. So there's a role for national mapping agencies, the private sector, universities and governments to create a whole new cadre of people who are able to kind of mix geography with maths and computer science, and they're able to process those large amounts of sensed data, if you like. I read the other day that if you're an expert in deep learning in the US, those guys are rare as hen's teeth, and people like Google and Facebook are hiring deep learning experts for the same sorts of salaries as they would pay for quarterbacks in the NFL. So we need that's kind of unsustainable. An organization like mine can't afford to pay people what we would pay a NFL quarterback to come and work for us. So we need to rapidly train people in the arts of data science, computer science, and geography, rather than having what we have at the moment, where you've got these kind of three separate tracks. Maybe maths and computer science blends more already, but geography seems to be a little bit remote from computer science and data science and mathematics. We talk a lot about data, but mapping will continue to be important. The map will continue to be the tool that's used to interpret and explain all of this data that we're collecting. But it's important that we encourage and improve the skills within our cartographers across the globe. So things like 3D mapping, mapping on different devices, mean that, that the kind of approaches that traditional cartographers take will need to change. So there's a recommendation and that, that existing cartographers work more with kind of digital design folks to create more appropriate ways of displaying information than traditional cartographic approaches might dictate. As you might expect, national mapping agencies or national mapping cartographic agencies should promote GI, promote and train, help to train people in geography, the application of geography, how you might use it to make decisions about how to run your country, ensure that there are new swathes of people that understand and can make decisions on the basis of GI coming through into the industry. That in our case, that manifests itself. So in manifests itself as Ordnance Survey supporting the whole of the education sector in the UK. So if you're from about age five, six, you can get access to all of Ordnance Survey's mapping data all the way up, all the way through university. We do things like we produce lesson plans for teachers so they can easily teach people how to use a compass or how to create a thematic map, that kind of thing. We lobby government to ensure that geography is part of the national curriculum. So in the UK, what you learn at school is defined by this thing called the national curriculum, and we lobby government to ensure that geography is in there so that all children have at least some level of understanding of geography and mapping and how to make decisions using a map and how to use a compass and those sorts of things, as well as then supporting higher education to ensure we get more specialist education and resources in place as well. As an industry, we'll need to continue to invest in R&D, clearly. In particular, how we are more effective at processing the large amounts of data that's collected from sensors that we talked about, how we might build more interesting location-based apps, and how we integrate those location-based apps with unstructured data. So that's maybe the next frontier of GI, how we can take our fairly structured world and mix it together with the massive volumes of unstructured data that's available through things like Twitter, for example. And then making sure that we're continually investing to iterate around prototypes to explore and exploit new technologies. Okay, so quickly onto the role of private and non-governmental sectors. So folks like Google and Microsoft have made mapping pervasive across the world. Likewise, so folks like OSM. But the private sector, so folks that will that continue to collect data privately, if you like, so I guess the Navtechs and the Teleatlases of the world, will continue to exist and be an important player in the ecosystem of GI. So lots of private sector organizations are commissioned by government organizations to collect data on their behalf, so the blue skies of the world. And some of those private sector organizations will compete with government organizations. So in our industry, there are folks that collect mapping in our country, there are folks that collect mapping information for London, and they sell that as a competitor to a product that Ordnance Survey sell. But it's the word to the wise for the private sector is that an increasing amount of data will be made available by government as free data, and that will make it tough for those guys to tough for those guys' business models. Likewise, an increasing amount of high quality information will be collected by the crowd. So if you are working for a private data collection company, you'd probably be thinking around how these sorts of things are going to affect your company and your industry over the next few years. The UN believe that crowdsourced and volunteered geographic information, which is what VGI, volunteer geographic information, it is here to stay and is an extremely important part of our ecosystem. it may well push national mapping agencies more into the role of geographic information managers, people that look after data rather than perhaps capture it themselves. We've seen already how important it is in the developing parts of the world, and will continue to be. So it continue to be important to mix that volunteered or crowdsourced information with private information. So the stuff that's happening at the moment, searching for planes, where the private sector is providing, private and government sector are providing imagery data that's then being crowdsourced on top of, is a trend that will continue. But at the same time, you can't crowdsource everything, so there's an important role for government to play in continuing to capture data in the parts that you can't reach, perhaps with a GPS unit or with some tracing over aerial imagery. So what's the role of government? What does government think it's going to be doing over the next few years? It's probably less about capturing data and more about managing data capture from lots of different parts of the ecosystem, if you like. So crowdsourced data, private sector data, some data that government captures itself, and ensuring that data can be knitted together, is collected to a standard, folks understand the quality of those different data sets. So it becomes a matter of how we might integrate data sets together, how we work more closely together between sort of traditional mapping providers and crowdsource or open source mapping providers. So really that's the role that the UN and the mapping, the national mapping agencies that are involved in UNGGIMC, them starting to fulfill over the next few years. It's this role of geographic information management provider. So the person that might store a national geographic database that's quality assured and kept up to date and is sourced from all sorts of different places. And the example they use is water. So when you turn on a tap, certainly in Spain and certainly in the UK, you kind of know what you're going to get. And the national mapping agencies expect themselves, or see themselves providing a role of kind of quality assuring and not maintaining, but organizing data so that when you consume geographic information from a national mapping agency, you kind of know what you're getting. So that was very whistle-stop. These documents are reasonably thick. And there are many, many links there, so for you guys to go and have a read. So there's the document that I just quickly whizzed through. It are on these two links. We can circulate these slides. There's also an interesting doc that describes the state of mapping in various different countries across the world. So by the national mapping agencies themselves, so you'll understand the state of mapping in Spain, in Africa, in anywhere in the world, frankly. So that I thought that would be another interesting read for folks, particularly folks that are interested in OpenStreetMap and crowdsourcing and so on. Okay, right, I've whizzed slightly over my time, but thank you very much for listening.
Thank you, John, for this talk.
Pleasure.
It seems good news for our community.
Yeah.
I think. Any question? Tenemos poco tiempo. Si alguna pregunta, y si no, tal vez lo dejamos tiempo de la comida. No? Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, John.
Pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.